Hey, this is Jeff. We'll get to the show in a second. If you want to support the show or find back episodes of the show or find our other podcasts or find articles or quotes on early learning, all that kind of stuff is over at playvolutionhq.com. We're trying to curate the early learning world. Check it out. Here's the show.
I love your dog. I can't believe he's feeding on me with another woman.
Yeah,
but
just follows
knowing that that woman is Lisa Murphy is pretty cool. I'll sign it. It's
all Sharpie. His belly. Welcome to the Child Care Barn Girl Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me again is Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And via the magic of the interweb. Tiffany Pearsall's back from her mountaintop retreat.
Yep.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Mountain of sand.
Mountain of sand retreat. So we've been working on through this this form we put together that outlines, it's basically the scientific method. We kind of tweaked this version of it together for early learning people who are interested in engaging in some personal research. And we've made it through asking a question. And so that's pretty self-explanatory. You find yourself curious about something and you go, aha! And you ask a question. And then you do some background research to kind of find out a little bit about your question. And maybe that involves revising your question a little bit. You get a little bit more research. And then from there, you create a hypothesis, which is generally an I think or I believe type question, something that you want to dig into a little bit more and try to figure out the answer to. It's your best, no, well, wait, no, it's your best guess at the answer. The hypothesis is the best guess at the answer to the question, right? See, I was listening to the show, and I made four notes.
Ooh.
And then from that hypothesis, you start doing some experimenting. We toyed with the idea of Timmy. I don't know.
Kimmy
was biting, and we were thinking maybe it's because she's hungry, or maybe it's because she doesn't have language. And then you do some experimenting. In future episodes, we're going to look at some observation forms we put together that can look at kind of where things in your program are taking place, or when they're taking place, and kind of be used as research tools for getting at an answer and trying to figure out your hypothesis. So once you do some experimenting, you move on to analyzing data and drawing conclusions. What the heck does that mean?
That means you look at your observations and you decide if it was true or not. Like, was your hypothesis true? Yes or no?
So if I thought that she was biting always in the dress-up area because there were always too many children in there and it was hard for them to share, take turns with a favorite thing there, and I used one of my observation tools and noticed that there were always 10 kids clustered together at the same time, then there could be some proof to the hypothesis that there's when she's surrounded by too many people, she might be getting frustrated, and that's when she engages in that behavior. As an example, would that be correct? Correct?
Yes.
So when you look at your data and you draw your conclusions, is this when you find out if you win at research?
I was just going to say that. I win.
There is no win in research, Jeff. Oh. Just like there is no I in team.
Oh, well, you don't win at research.
No.
Oh, okay.
Go on, Tiffany.
The whole point of research is to figure out something new, and no matter what, you figure out something new, even if that is, nope, that wasn't what was stressing Kimmy out.
So just the process of creating this process is the win.
Yes.
Okay,
purposeful reflection, man.
So your analysis, your conclusions may align with your hypothesis. They may kind of align with your hypothesis, there may be no correlation, there may be no connection between your hypothesis and the result.
Totally.
And all of those are wins because you learned something no matter what.
Yes.
And
technically speaking, I think we need to draw a line here. When you're looking from like the technical science perspective, the results are just the yes or no. When you interpret that, that's the next step.
Yeah. So how do we get more gooder at interpreting the results? So we did our experiment, and are we just sitting down and going, what's this mean? And then taking it from there, or what are we doing? Is there a formal process here, or is there like a sub process, or are you just thunking about stuff?
I think, Jeff, you might be overthinking this part here a little bit too much.
It's not me for once.
I'm just trying to be clear.
Well, I mean, if your hypothesis, okay, just to keep the same story going, if my hypothesis is that I think that she's biting in the dress-up center because there's too many people in there, and come to find out, you know, she wasn't biting then, you know, whatever the situation might be, that she was biting then or she wasn't biting then. Okay, so what am I going to do with this information now? So I don't know if there's too much extra processing happening in that stage, but I think there could be various options as you try and then implement what your data gathering has taught you.
Okay. Analyze data just sounds very complicated.
Yeah, but it's a sexy way of saying, you know, read how many tally marks, you know, that you took in when you were looking for this behavior.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear somebody tell me. And so conclusions, how do you know if you draw good conclusions? You need to keep those conclusions based on the data. Or can you collect data? You do research and you analyze it, and can you still be, can you bring your own biases in there and still think, well, I want the data to mean this and twist it?
Actually your data gathering could reveal a bias. Like, let's say you're thinking Kimmy's biting in the dress-up center because there's too many kids, but come to find out she's only doing it in the dress-up center when Mackenzie's in there with her. And here you thought it was a bigger thing, but actually your data is showing you something else. Or maybe in your brain you think she's biting all the time, but you're doing a time analysis.
And it happens once.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think sometimes it sheds light on a bias.
Okay.
Definitely. I have a similar real life story in which the other teacher in the room was like, this one kid requires so much more of our time. And I was like, what? No. The same, but then I tallied how many teacher interventions he had an hour, and it was like 7 times the next highest number of interventions of the next most challenging kid. It's like, oh yeah, okay, like we do need to stop and look at this.
You're right, Becky.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Okay, so you do your experiment, you analyze your data, and you draw that conclusion, and maybe it's what matches your hypothesis, maybe it doesn't. Next, you go on to sharing results. Now, if you're doing this just for yourself, there's not really anybody to share with.
Yeah, but if you had been maybe telling the parents, like maybe this was some kind of a collaborative effort, you know, then you would be potentially sharing your results with the parents. Hey, I'm going to be watching for this behavior. You're going to be watching there, you know, in 10 days, let's have another follow-up meeting and see what are you saying and what am I saying?
Yeah. So even though you're doing this on your own and you may be the prime beneficiary of the work, sharing it with peers, sharing it with parents, talking to your dog about it might be good just because it allows you to think through it a little bit more too, sharing with other people. And so is there benefit on in the analyzing or the sharing sections of this? Is there any benefit in having fresh eyes put on it?
Absolutely. I think the more people that can help you with your research, the better. Even if that means like maybe it's somebody else in your classroom, maybe it's a peer trying a similar thing in their classroom, depending on how specific it is. But I think the more eyes and the more minds that you have working on a problem, the more flexible solutions you'll find.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking of maybe like a family childcare person doing this on their own with their own program, and you get to that analysis stage and you've collected this data and you've been diligent about that for yourself, and you're just kind of still fiddling with what's this mean and how do I interpret this? Having an outside pair of eyes might be might be valuable in moving forward with the process. And so that's probably a good thing to do.
Absolutely. Yes.
I think it also, depending on the actual situation or the question you're looking to either answer or get more information about, if you had multiple classrooms in one school of the same ages, like let's say you had 4 4-year-old classrooms, look to see if the same behaviors were occurring in the other classrooms as well, or is this something that might be unique to only that one classroom?
Yeah.
Which could give some information more specific to that. Like then you can start picking apart then those other variables. Okay, so if you're saying that we're wondering if all the kids are biting, if there's too many kids in one of the interest areas, one of the centers, and come to find out it's really only happening in one of those classrooms, then that might shed light on other variables that you want to pay attention to before you start making some kind of policy that now we're only going to allow 4 children in every center at a time, otherwise they start to bite.
Yeah. I like that. Talking about sharing results, while we're on this one before we move on, I want to throw this out there. If you're out there in your program and you're listening to these episodes, you decide to give this a try, and you want to share your results broader, share them with me, because I'd love to hear about this, even if it's just some little tiny thing that you're dealing with in your own program, because I'd like to write a small blurb about those kind of things that I can share on the Playvolution site, where it kind of, I think examples of what other people are doing would be beneficial for people who are wanting to give this a try. So I'd love to hear the results of your personal research along these lines that we can share with others. And because I think the more community you can build around engaging in this process, the better off too, because it's just a wider audience, a broader voice, and you can kind of learn from the way others have done it, huh?
Definitely. And this, you're not going to like this. I think this is an excellent use of Pinterest.
Elaborate.
Because there are so many different observation tools in the special education world that they use specifically for very specific things that you can broaden and suddenly use to shed light on something that happens in your program. So an example, like Lisa, you were saying, checking during a specific duration of time. Every 5 minutes I check to see who's in this station. Or timing a kid how many times they switch from activities in the room, or writing down how many words they say in each phrase. Special education has millions of these mini observation research things they do for all the kids in their care. And Pinterest is a great place to sort of hunt for new ways to research something that you might not have thought of yourself. Hot take.
No. Are you going to...
I'm just listening to my phone ring.
No, are you going to jump in and give yourself a shameless plug?
Oh, people, listen, we talked about those already. But we just, between our break, Lisa and I made a new form.
Ooh.
I don't know where it is. Maybe we'll
say. I love forms.
We made a DAP observation form.
So you can start elaborating on how what DAP domain is being met while you're observing some play. I want to jump in a little bit and up the ante, not to scare anybody away, but if let's say your personal research question was a little bit bigger or a little bit broader, there are tons of places that would love to publish that, to in addition to sending it to Jeff. You know, there's a lot of journals out there that would love to hear, especially if you're a student. And I also love the idea, Jeff, of you starting some kind of a catalog of this stuff, because for some of our colleagues who then decide to take the plunge to maybe do a master's or a PhD level to read some of these, I think kind of takes some of the scariness away, because essentially a master's thesis is nothing more than this same exact process, but just a little bit maybe bigger topic-wise, or having to do a little bit more of the background research prior to investigate who else has thought of this as a research question, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm also going to say that most conferences would love to have you submit a proposal to share the research that you have found. So, you know, if that's something that you're interested in too, don't forget that that's also an outlet to share the information, because that's when you find, especially then as you get further on down this list, and I know I'm jumping the gun here, but that's where you might get peer suggestions on if you want to replicate it or do it again, or did your results actually bring up a second question? So now you want to go back and redo it now with this more information. Anytime you can get peer input on your question, I think it deepens the research that you're doing.
I think that's really cool. And I like the idea of just a handful of nerdy early learning people playing with this idea, because I can see somebody coming up with a hypothesis and three or four programs trying the same experiment essentially to dig into it and seeing and comparing the results. And
well,
and
that's good research. Kind of right. If I come up with some big grand conclusion and somebody else is able to duplicate that and replicate that, that just makes our findings that much stronger and more valid.
Absolutely.
I just see your nerd brains just start spinning.
Oh my God, I love this shit. I know Tiffany too,
And I feel like I have to put in a plug for, not plug, that's not the right word. I need to speak up for any provider that this sounds big and scary to. Education as a science, as a field, is so new that, like, it's not like you're gonna mess it up.
Yeah, true.
In the grand scheme of places where research has been done, we're babies. So, like, you might be the first person who's ever really tried to do this research in this way, and that's cool.
But you better have a lab coat.
Or no, you don't put the lab coat on until you're processing your data. You don't. Right, right? You might not need the lab coat while you're
your fishing vest.
Well, and I know that was when Jeff kind of threw this idea at me for a series when I was here in studio with you. I one of my biggest things was, how do we make sure that one of the objectives is to make it not scary? I mean, that's something that's really important, because I think the word research scares the shit out of people. I think when we say things like, you need to be familiar with the research that's supporting play in the lives of young children, what even does that mean? And it might just mean read an article, you know, and it might mean that article then prompts you to have a question of your own. And I really like how we've outlined this piece of paper. Where is this going to be available?
This will be posted on every one of these episodes, and that'll be on the HQ site too. So we've got a couple more to go on this list, but I've got we're coming up to the end of an episode. And I got a question about sharing the results, and that all results are valid, because isn't there a problem out in the official research world where people don't get the results that they were expecting or want? And then the stuff just gets kind of filed away instead of published and shared. And so we lose the value of those bits of research.
No.
Bullshit.
My thought to that is that I think sometimes people do realize, as they're gathering their data or as they're analyzing their data, that the information that they've actually collected is going to prove their theory wrong. And maybe they had an agenda and they needed it to come out one way. And they're like, oh shit, based on our actual observation, this is not going to support our hypothesis. Maybe we should shit can this altogether. Or they go back and they tweak some of their question to then fit the data that was actually gathered. My experience more has been that big reports get submitted, like, to the general public, but then depending on the interest group, will lock and load on one or two things that might end up misrepresenting the actual data that was actually collected.
Yeah, and we got assholes like that guy we talked about, that food
researcher. The food guy.
That and he was faking data, I guess, and he was at Cornell University. And they kind of took away his tenure
and they brushed him out the back door.
Banishing him. So I mean, there's a lot of ethical stuff going on when it comes to research, and there are researchers, professional researchers out there who have personal agendas to push, and that influences their research sometimes, or the results they get, and really that doesn't move science or research forward. it just kind of, it maybe pushes an agenda, but that's not really the way science is supposed to work, is it?
Mm-mm, no. And I just, yeah, I think the research that finds something new and groundbreaking is what we hear about, but we don't hear about, you know, you walk into a cave and there are four different roads to go down because of research that says, no, you won't choose those two roads. You'll try one of these other two. And eventually you'll get to the groundbreaking. But I know when I wrote my undergrad bio thesis, I read plenty of boring studies where nothing happened and said, nope, I guess I'm not going to try that. Oh, this one hasn't been tried yet. Let's try it and see what happens.
Cool. Can I ask one more question? I asked Lisa this morning. Is science ever settled?
No.
Okay. Because I hear in the news all the time that, and I get confused about stuff because, I'm told that the climate change science is settled. And I don't care about the climate. It's not, I'm going to die before anything really bad happens. So I'm cool with that. Stick with me, Tiffany. You can educate me in a minute. So there's a lot of people out there in the world saying climate science is settled, and this is a big complicated thing, right? The Earth's climate, and then we still can't figure out whether salt is good for us or bad for us, or coffee is good for us or bad for us, or the way we should fucking eat eggs or not eat eggs, and those are like little things, and so that science is all wide open, but science, we could find out 6 months from now that gravity doesn't work the way we think it does, right? It's unlikely.
It's unlikely, but.
Very unlikely. But it could happen, right? Because science is always an ongoing process, and there's always the potential for new information to be discovered.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. I just wanted to know.
But here's.
Go ahead.
If we want to get into climate change.
And we really don't, but go ahead.
What's the, there's some, no, we'll have to say this for another episode because I can't remember the word for it. That you should believe in climate change for the same reason you should believe in God. That the risk of not believing in it is worse than not. What, there's a word for that.
Okay, well, I don't believe in God either, so.
What I'm trying to say is that, like, if you don't believe in climate change,
well, I mean, the climate's changing. The climate's always been changing.
Yeah. But you have more to lose than believing in climate change and it not being real.
Oh, so you're trying to hedge your bets.
I'm trying. Yes, exactly.
Here's I'm not a bet hedger. There is no God. I'm going to die. I'm going to become compost, and then I'm going to become a rose bush or some shit like that. So
Jeff, this is why I love you dearly.
I've got no bet to hedge. Hey, this has been the Child Care Barn Grill podcast.
He's going to come back as a hedge.
Yes. I'm not going to hedge my bets. I'm going to be composted and come back as a hedge. That's exactly right. Back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's called Pascal's Wager.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.